A word of warning. This episode contains mature language depicting instances of sexual, physical, and/or emotional abuse of children.
Pretty much been disastrous here for the Americans on Beam.
Well, it's very different than it was last year in Atlanta. Their performance tonight is not about medals, but about regaining some respect.
Oh, she missed a connection right there. Boy, when you talk about meltdown, this is tough to watch. High hopes for the American team, not only here at the Worlds, but of course next year's Olympics.
And the United States, you have to say it, a disappointing sixth.
This is episode 5, The Caroli Way.
I remember overhearing the coaches talking about us and how awful we were. If you're not winning, you're losing, and you're a piece of shit, basically. That's how they made you feel.
Jeanette Antolin was a gymnast on the 1999 U.S. World Championship team, a team that finished sixth of six teams in the final.
We were the worst national team they had ever had, and we were the biggest disappointment.
Very disappointing effort by the U.S. They seemed to lack intensity and focus.
In the 3 short years since Bella and Marta Caroli had retired, USA Gymnastics had gone from a team gold at the 1996 Atlanta Games to mediocrity on the world stage. This was bad news for a federation that depended on sponsors. And no single event brought in sponsorship money like the Olympics. With the next Olympics just 10 months away, new USA Gymnastics president Bob Colarossi turned to the most recognizable name in gymnastics, Bella Caroli.
After the World Championships, Colarossi went to the ranch and said, okay, what will it take for you to do this?
Nancy Armour is a columnist for USA Today. She's covered gymnastics for more than 20 years.
There was a belief that if anybody could do anything, it was going to be Bella. Look at what he had already done in the past.
Bob Colarossi drew Bella out of retirement in November 1999 with a newly created position, National Team Coordinator. In this role, Bella would design the overall training program, oversee team preparation heading into the Sydney Games, and play a key role in selecting the final team. His goal? Get the U.S. back into medal contention at the Olympic Games.
I remember talking to Don Peters. Don Peters was probably Bella's original rival, and they had never really patched things up. He said, I signed off on this wholeheartedly.
Don Peters was banned from USA Gymnastics for life in 2011 following sexual abuse allegations. But in 1999, he was still one of the most prominent coaches in the sport. And he and the other elite coaches realized that something was wrong with the way they were training the national team.
He said, I think this is a good idea. And I kind of looked at him and he said, we need somebody who is strong enough to get the coaches to listen to. And he said, what we've been doing isn't working. And what these other countries, it's obviously worked for the Russians and the Romanians and the Chinese. And maybe if we can do that, but give it an American spin, then we can have sustained success.
USA Gymnastics was acknowledging the need to take the old every gym for itself approach to elite gymnastics and consolidate it under Bella Caroli. After almost 20 years in the United States, Bella finally had control over a semi-centralized system. Bella's first move as national team coordinator, bring everyone to Texas.
He had the ranch. So there was a central place that everybody could come to. I mean, granted, it's in the middle of nowhere, but you had the gym space. You had the cabins where his summer campers stayed. So you had the facilities to make it happen.
Now, all roads to the Olympics ran through the Caroli Ranch.
It was the epicenter of where Olympic athletes were being made. And to be able to be there was almost like a dream come true.
Olympic hopeful Tasha Schweikert received her first invitation to the ranch as a 12-year-old. The ranch was as legendary as the Carolis. Gymnasts like Tasha and Jamie Dancher were thrilled to see it in person for the first time.
It was like, I get to be here. I must be pretty good because I get to meet Bella and Marta. They train champions. I was just in awe that I was even in the same room with them.
In January 2000, Tasha, Jamie, and the rest of the top two dozen or so U.S. gymnasts traveled to the Karoly Ranch with their personal coaches for the first of what would become monthly mandatory training camps.
They decided we needed those camps.
Alyssa Beckerman was a member of the national team competing for a shot at the 2000 Olympics.
I understood that part. That part I was on board with when it happened. They decided we need to do like a national team training thing and do it more regularly. And I liked that, you know, because I liked the people I was competing with. We knew each other for years and it's kind of cool to see more often, you know, and to work out with them and just up our game together, you know. I liked that.
Alyssa saw the potential upside to this new experiment, and she was prepared to put in the work, ready to learn from the fabled Bella Karoly.
Bella's like a big bear, like a big animal, is the best way I can describe him. Lots of gestures and facial expressions, and even his vocal tones were very expressive, you know. He was like an actor, almost cartoonish.
Bella, you were made the national team coordinator just before the end of 1999. Right. Did you leave enough time for you to put a mark on this, to be successful in the year 2000? Is there enough time?
Time is short.
Yes.
But I don't believe that time is going to be the most important matter. The understanding of the girls, their desire, their effort, what they're going to put into the final preparation stage, that's going to matter the most.
Bella's focus had always been repetition and conditioning. And with such a tight schedule, he leaned on that more than ever.
It pretty much was boot camp. Like, it was strenuous. Like, boot camp isn't easy. No one wants to do boot camp.
Camp for Jeanette Antolin and her teammates began the same way each day, with Bella's grueling conditioning sessions. 40 minutes to an hour of running around a 40-square-foot spring floor, followed by rope climbs using your arms only, a series of 10 straddle press handstands, 10 cast handstands on bars, 10 pike presses on low beam, and ab exercise after ab exercise after ab exercise.
It was this crazy, ridiculous warm-up that he would put us through. And I just remember being exhausted. I'm like, what is happening?
And that was just the start of 2 4-hour training sessions each day.
The USA Gymnastics, the Federation, they were all there. They were all watching every turn we took. And we were under a microscope.
The point of practice is to practice. That's where gymnasts make mistakes. That's where they learn. During Bella's camps, even those mistakes in practice were being watched and judged by the people who held all the power when it came to their future in the sport.
And you would see a group of powers that be, of people running USA Gymnastics, all huddle in a corner talk. It was a mind... trying to find a nicer word than the one I want to use. It was a mind fuck.
Few people got inside the gymnast's heads more than Bella and Marta.
You know, they just ingrain that Romanian diva program mind into the girls. And that's what they were doing with us. Here's how you're going to behave and think and act, and you're just expendable. You're lucky to be here. They were very good at, you know, the psychological warfare of the sport. Gymnastics is 90% mental.
I remember Bella would always line us up.
Feet together, arms by your side, look forward like a little soldier.
When you're in lineup, you stand straight and tall like a little soldier and make eye contact.
I felt motivated by fear. I didn't want to mess up in front of Bella, Marta, or anybody on the national staff. My dream of being Olympian was in their hands.
At the end of the first camp, Bella cut the pool of gymnasts by half.
Then we come back a month later, and there would be less people. So to me, I explain it like Survivor. And sometimes you knew why people were being cut, and sometimes they were just cut. So every time you stepped on in the gym, you had to be on your A game.
Tasha and Jeanette made that first cut. So did Jamie and Alyssa.
After that first camp, people really took a psychological turn for the worse. People started dropping like flies, physically, but also psychologically. We would cry on our way to the airport to go to the ranch after that.
I just remember it, like, riding the bus to get to the ranch and being sick to my stomach, just feeling like I had to be so perfect. I mean, not even inside the gym, but outside the gym as well, like how I stood, how I wore my hair, what I ate.
Some people, you know, in sports, they'll say, if I say jump, you say how high, you know, gymnastics. If I say jump, you just jump. You don't ask anything. You ask how high, you're being insubordinate. That's gymnastics. I was stripped of choice. I was told what to eat, what to wear, how to think, don't speak.
They would check our bags for food, and I just remember this gradual transition in, like, loving gymnastics so much to hating it, to this kind of inner conflict of this love-hate relationship with it.
No aspect of the gymnasts' lives was more heavily scrutinized than what they ate. Jamie, Alyssa, Jeanette, Tasha, every single gymnast at those camps was constantly aware of the pressure to look and eat a certain way.
He would say, if you want to compete like a tiger, you eat like a tiger. If you want to compete like a cow, you eat like a cow.
The only thing I ever remember Bella really telling me was that my butt was too fat and I needed to lose it. He was in the middle of the floor and I was walking to another event. He said something to me and then grabbed my butt and said, you need to lose this. I probably said, yes, sir, and kept on walking and then got on a diet as soon as I got home.
We were all sitting around after a practice and Bella stood up, a gymnast who was very, very thin at the time, and said, I want all of you guys to look like her. She had a thigh gap. I remember her standing there and you could, like, see through her thighs when she did gymnastics. She had very thin lines. They always thought my lines weren't as straight and, you know, my gymnastics wasn't as pretty because an upside down handstand should look like a straight line. Well, my line would be, there'd be a little curve where my butt is. And there might be a little curve where my chest is. So my straight line, naturally, is just very different from some of my white teammates' straight lines. And so I internalize that, and I'm like, gosh, like, you know, I guess I'm just not good enough. I wish I could go back in time and say, hey, look, 15-year-old Tasha, you are half African-American. You have a different genetics. You will never have a thigh gap, and that's okay.
We all had unhealthy relationships with food.
I started thinking about what I was eating, like, all the time.
Everyone was trying to lose weight. Everybody. Everyone's fat. Like, we're all out of shape. Somehow, we're the national team of the United States of America, but we're all out of shape. Like, it was just insane.
I just remember being afraid to eat in front of anybody at the ranch. Like, they were watching us eat.
Month after month, the national team members returned to the ranch, roughly 2 hours north of Houston, isolated in the middle of a national forest.
Like, you have kids away from their family for almost a week, and the only communication they have is a payphone.
There was a single payphone that all of the gymnasts and coaches had to share.
No cell phone reception. At least at the time, there wasn't. None. Okay, I'm talking none. You would walk around just, and at the time we had the Nokia phones, and my dad had given me this little antenna thing, like, help, like, you know, boost the signal, nothing.
I remember getting a prepaid calling card, and I remember checking in with, you know, my mom or my dad, like, once or twice while I was there, and it was very quick, and so there wasn't much contact with, you know, family or friends at all.
If we didn't have access to that outside world, we would be more focused. I think it was just complete control. When you're at home, you can go home to people that really love you and care about you. When you're there, you have nobody that you feel like is on your side.
The gymnasts had no one to confide in, They saw their coaches and the Carolis as watchdogs. They knew they had to be very careful about what they said.
They're listening. You get overheard, that's it. One night, we're sitting in our cabin, in our living space, talking about how fun college is going to be. We were overheard. The next day in practice at the ranch, you know, my coach walks up to me and says, "Well, we could hear you through the walls, and you were talking about being wild, you know, like being unruly or something." It was like we were in trouble, or I was in trouble by my coach because we were heard discussing, I don't know, freedom.
The Carolis did not tolerate anything they considered a distraction in their gym.
What they would say is that if we were socializing or talking, that we weren't focused.
You're not there to hang out. You're not there to be friendly. You're there to train and to prove yourself. And it's a trial every single day.
With long, grueling days, early curfews, and a no talking in the gym policy, the gymnasts kept their feelings to themselves. They said nothing to each other about their fears or concerns or injuries. Instead, they put their heads down and concentrated. The Sydney Games were just around the corner.
One year ago, USA Gymnastics was in disarray, but recent events have created momentum and belief. You are looking at the rebirth.
Over two nights in August 2000, the Sydney hopefuls competed at the Olympic trials in Boston.
Do these Olympic trials determine who will represent the United States? Well, sort of.
Bella Caroli had been complaining about the Olympic selection process for as long as he'd been coaching in the United States. He didn't believe in simply taking the top finishers from trials. He thought that approach put the U.S. at a disadvantage.
This is straight out of the book of Romania, Eastern Bloc, gymnastics coaching.
Houston Chronicle writer John Lopez had frequently listened to Bella lay out his plan for USA Gymnastics.
He would always be a bigger advocate of the coach should sort of appoint, you know, who goes to the Olympics rather than a trials where anything could happen and a really talented gymnast could maybe be left out. He was more of an advocate of a combination of what the coaches say and what they do in that Olympic trials.
As national team coordinator, Bella named himself the head of a four-person committee that would consider scores from both national championships and Olympic trials, and then select the six-person team.
The athletes and the coaches don't know exactly what it's going to take to make it to the Olympic Games. Imagine playing a game and not knowing the rules.
The only thing that did seem clear? Bella Caroli was making the rules. And this process would be more subjective than ever before.
Bella Caroli is right there, 20 feet away, staring at it.
Over 2 days of competition, the central question was, what does Bella Caroli think?
Thanks, Al. I just walked over and checked in with Bella Caroli. I said, any thoughts so far about the meet? He said, it's too early to say anything.
There he is.
Sometimes you get the feeling he's trying to put a little bit more pressure on certain athletes because he feels they need it.
It only matters what Marta or Bella thinks.
1984 Olympian Tracy Talavera was on the selection committee.
So, too bad if the kid just did the best routine ever or that she had three falls. That's not the point. What is Marta or Bella going to think?
This thing is going to come down to who Bella believes can do the job at the Olympic Games under all of that pressure.
They wanted the team that would be most consistent and who did what they wanted the most. Not just the athletes, it was more the coaches that surrounded those athletes and who played their game.
It's your worst nightmare come true. You know, you train your whole life and they change all the rules on you. And suddenly it's not about scoring well, it's about being liked.
I mean, it was pretty much Bella and Marta who created the team, and so they said who they wanted and everyone followed in suit.
But a costly low score on the balance beam has cost Jamie Dancher dearly. She has fallen down to sixth position behind Vanessa Adler. Big time pressure now on Alyssa Beckerman. Now remember, she's living in bubble land here at these Olympic trials. Here is Jeanette Antolin. She just had a disaster on the balance beam.
Jeanette basically is out of this competition, out of the running. I mean, there never was any hope.
Bella Caroli ominously wearing black tonight. Some difficult choices to be made. And now Bella Caroli, Tracy Talavera, Shari Neidhunter, and Marilyn Cross will go into a back room here at the Fleet Center. When they come out, hearts will be broken and dreams will be fulfilled.
All of this played out on television, while the nearly 20,000 fans at the Fleet Center in Boston waited. Tracy had gone into the process with some pessimism, but was ultimately hopeful it could be fair. Then she got in the actual room with Bella.
He took his sheet of paper, and I wish to God I still had this, but he took one girl, circled her name, took an arrow, drew it up to in the top, and took the girl who was in the top, X'd her name out, and wrote, "Not going," and handed it to me, and he said, "This will be the team."
Here comes Bob Colarossi, the CEO of USA Gymnastics. Man, are the fortunes going to change here?
Cameras followed as Bob Colarossi entered the backstage room where the gymnasts were waiting with their coaches and read the list of names.
Amy Chow, Jamie Dancer, Dominique Dawes, Kristen Maloney, Arif Ray, and Morgan White. The alternate is Alyssa Beckerman.
When they announced the team, I was proud. Proud that all the hard work and all those years and everything I went through, like maybe it was all worth it.
Jamie made the team, and Alyssa was named as the alternate. But Tasha and Jeanette didn't hear their names called.
I thought I was done. I thought that, you know, this is where the buck stops. But it was a great run.
I kind of knew that it wasn't going to happen. But there was nothing I could do about it. It's like everything in your life is gone. And then you question why you even did it to yourself in the first place. Like, why did I give up my entire childhood for this one moment where you can make one mistake and it all goes away?
The gymnasts who hadn't been chosen waited backstage while the team was welcomed onto the floor of the Fleet Center to a screaming audience.
Bella has selected his team. Is it possible that this could be Sydney's Super Six?
Bella savored the moment. After just 10 months on the job, he had given American fans what they wanted heading into Sydney. Something to believe in.
This team combines the best of the country. It's a powerful team, and I believe they're going to be again Olympic medal contenders.
Days later, USA Gymnastics called 15-year-old Tasha Schweikert.
Then we get a call that they want to travel me to Sydney as the second alternate. Great. I get a free trip to Sydney. I get to train alongside the Olympic team and my idols.
But Tasha, Jamie, and Alyssa had little time to celebrate.
For the next month, I had an Olympic trials every single day in the gym.
We went for about a 2.5 month period without a single day off.
Our day off was the flight to Sydney.
But I remember being instructed to do a plane workout, so we worked out on the aisle of the plane.
Flew 15 hours, dropped our bags off, you know, and went right back to the gym.
A record 199 nations, more than 10,000 athletes. The Olympic Games have come down under. And Sydney has been ready and waiting for quite some time. Welcome to the first Olympic Games of the new millennium. I'm Bob Costas.
Opening ceremonies are happening, and they don't allow us to go. So everybody's crying in the main room of this den where they have a tiny TV to watch the opening ceremonies. And the girls are sitting there, the team, and they're all like tears in their eyes because they can't be there. They can't enjoy the Olympics.
Bella Caroli and USA Gymnastics brought the same discipline they'd employed at the ranch with them to Sydney. While most athletes stayed at the Olympic Village, the U.S. women's gymnastics team stayed at a local women's college 20 minutes outside the city center.
The only way I can explain this place is like, it was kind of like prison.
No phone calls, no unsupervised visits from family, and even at the most festive sporting event in the world, no interacting with other athletes.
It was like they set up the ranch in Sydney for us.
T Team USA arrived in Sydney as underdogs, but Bella had been charged with getting them back on the medal stand, so he wouldn't relent on the training and the pressure.
We had double practices every day. Like, every day was like a competition in the morning and a competition at night. It was crazy.
We couldn't leave the grounds. We couldn't even walk to a meal, to the kitchen by ourselves, because they didn't want us to eat the food, even though they weren't feeding us enough food. The chefs put out little bowls filled with raisins, and the other one was filled with some sort of like a Nutri-Grain granola bar. So I grabbed one of each snack to take back to my room. I remember walking out and Marta coming up to me and taking the raisins and taking the Nutri-Grain bar out of my hand, saying to me that we weren't going to eat these things because lighter women fly higher. Have you ever had food like literally taken out of your hand when you were starving? On at least four occasions in Sydney, I cried myself to sleep because I was hungry. I had never cried myself to sleep about food in my entire life, but we're at the Olympic Games and I am like physically starving.
A few days before the competition started, one of Bella's team members, Morgan White, withdrew with a broken foot. That meant Alyssa or Tasha would get a chance to compete at the Olympics.
We lined up for practice, and Bella got impatient. And he said, okay, it is unfortunate, Morgan White is injured, but we must continue, and Tasha, you are in, Beckerman, you are out. Okay, to the right. Arch. And I turned to the right and warmed us up.
If you were with us for the Olympic trials and you're watching Tasha Schweikert in the Olympics, you have to be surprised because her name was not one that was mentioned that night in Boston. No, she was added by Bella Caroli as a second alternate after that.
And since day one in speaking with Bella about who he thought would be on that team way back in January, Tasha Schweikert's name was always near the top of his list.
Tasha had finished behind Alyssa at the Olympic trials, but this was exactly what Bella had argued all along, that his feeling about a particular gymnast, what he believed she was capable of, was a better guiding principle than scores alone.
And it's amazing to think that he is going to rely on a 15-year-old Tasha Schweikert who has never been in a big-time event like the World Championships or the Olympic Games. She is going to set the tone for this team. That's a big position to be in.
Inside the Sydney Superdome, with the whole world watching, Tasha Schweikert made her Olympic debut.
With just the dismount left, I'd have to say that this is the kind of performance that Bella was looking for to start off this team.
Great start from Tasha Schweikert, gets Team USA going. Biggest meet of her life.
For the better part of the past year, Bella Caroli and USA Gymnastics had put these young athletes under as much pressure as they could in order to prepare them for the Olympic stage. This was the chance for Bella to prove it had been worth it.
As national team coordinator, Bella Caroli will watch from the seats, and so we won't see that fabulous interaction as we have with Kerry Strug or Mary Lou Retton. Not this time, not in Sydney.
In fact, any time the TV cameras panned to Bella, he was sitting in the stands looking visibly unhappy.
Bella Caroli has been watching everything from up on high.
Bella, he looks a little bit frustrated, probably wishes he was on the floor, even though if he was, couldn't really do all that much about that one.
The U.S. women struggled on the first day. After Tasha's promising start, it was all downhill. They barely nabbed the last spot in the six-team final. So Bella tried to do what Bella did best, the only way he was allowed to.
One thing Bella Caroli did, he gave the American women a sort of rah-rah, you represent the United States speech in the warm-up gym. And they came in with a totally different persona, as you saw. And this is a much better United States team already than it was the other night.
But it was too little too late. The U.S. team would have needed a near-perfect meet to bump Russia, Romania, or China off the medal stand.
The Superdome resembling something of a hospital ward about now. Ice bags and medics in demand. It's been a struggle for the U.S.
And it seemed like the gymnasts and their bodies were crumbling under the pressure.
They are a team beset with problems, problems, problems.
She was way off, not even a hope of saving that skill.
the vibe right now for the United States is not a good one.
The team finished in fourth place, with no individual medals. But public expectations had been ramped up by the success of the Magnificent Seven 4 years before, and everyone wanted someone to blame.
We were just trashed on, our whole team.
I felt like I had let my country down. They'd made us feel like we had let our country down.
Even Bella trashed us. Like, the second we didn't give him what he wanted, we didn't medal, he complained.
I remember Bella being extremely disappointed that we got fourth. We were the most disappointing people to him ever that he's ever coached. We were embarrassing.
Bella told newspaper reporters that this group of athletes didn't want it as badly as the 96 team, that they didn't have the same work ethic. He blamed their personal coaches. He complained about not being allowed on the floor as national team coordinator, where he believed his theatrics would have helped.
Bella takes credit when everyone does well, but when we don't do well, then the blame's on us.
In her own interview after the competition, Jamie Dancher fired back at Bella.
I didn't really give a shit anymore.
Jamie's elite gymnastics career was over. She was headed to UCLA in the fall. She had nothing to lose.
The gymnastics world believed that Bella and Marta were the best and that this is the way and that they knew what they were doing. And nobody had reason to really believe what I was saying. I was just so glad to be done with those people.
For the first time since 1976, U.S. women's gymnastics had failed to medal at the Olympics. There was too much pride and too much sponsorship money at stake for USA Gymnastics to do nothing. So during a national team camp, they held a meeting at the Caroli Ranch. In attendance were the coaches of every national team member, the Olympic staff, USAG bigwigs, and of course, the national team coordinator himself.
And then Bella comes in saying, oh, at the Olympics, it was the coach's fault.
Coach Rita Brown couldn't believe what she was hearing.
The coaches, they couldn't get along. They wouldn't listen. They wouldn't do what I was saying. That's all their fault. Nobody's saying anything. I let him finish, and then I raised my hand, and I stood up, and I don't know why I did this. It was pretty gutsy. And I said, Bella, how dare you do that? Everybody relied on your leadership, your knowledge, and your experience. The performances are based on how we prepared those kids. That's you. That's on you.
Bella Caroli had shown USA Gymnastics that winning was possible in the first place. He'd given them their first taste of gold. But when they needed him to win the most, he hadn't brought home medals, just excuses. He left the organization with no choice but to look for a replacement.
He was in charge. When you're in charge, it comes down on you.
If you or someone you know has been subjected to sexual assault or abuse and you would like more information or support, these hotlines can help. RAIN's 24/7 confidential national sexual assault hotline, 1-800-656-4673, or Child Help, 1-800-422-4453. Coming up on the next episode of Heavy Metals.
They wanted to make it very clear that Bella was out and Marta was in.
Our main goal to bring back the medal contender situation.
You can trust Marta to train the best gymnasts in the world.
It was hard landing, hard landing, hard landing, hard landing. And that breaks kids.
You can't trust Marta to care about those gymnasts as human beings.
You can hear the impact. And you're looking at this kid and you're thinking, what's that doing to her hips, her back, her knees?
Walker County 911, what's the location of the emergency?
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry?
We need the ambulance to come if you don't want to waste time.
Heavy Metals was reported by me, Alyssa Ronick, and Bonnie Ford. Producers Andrew Mombo and Meredith Hodnott. Senior producer Julia Lowry Henderson. Executive producers Libby Geist and Aaron Lydon. Mix engineering and sound design by Mitra Kaboli. Production management and licensing, Luis Argianis, Kath Sankey, and Jennifer Thorpe. Production assistants, Riley Bloom, Gus Navarro, Samantha Dowd, and Trevor Gill. Original music by Ian Koss. Executive producers for ESPN, Connor Schell, Rob King, and Allison Overholt. This podcast was developed by Jenna Anthony and Adam Newhouse with help from Jody Avergan. Additional production support from Amy Van Dusen and Eve Wolf. Archival producer, Juliana Branham. John Mastro-Berardino provided fact-checking. Terry Langford did legal research. ESPN Audio, Tom Ricks, Megan Judge, Pete Giannacini, and Ryan Graner. Special thanks to Jenna Janovi and Elaine Tang, Jolene Van Vuit, and the production teams at ESPN LA and ESPN New York. This season of 30 for 30 podcasts was produced in association with ESPNW.